Terry Francona joins us on Sports Byline, now the manager of the Cleveland Indians, but of course previously managed in Philadelphia and with the Boston Red Sox and brought them two World Series championships. But he has a wonderful book out that I hope you'll check out. It's called Francona, The Red Sox Years. You know, Terry, I was a little bit surprised that you wrote a book, mainly because I didn't think it was your style, but was it the purpose of writing this book to set the record straight?
Yeah, Ron, not really. When the season was over, after the 11th season, Dan Shaughnessy approached me about it, and my initial reaction was, no, I'm really not interested. And then he kind of kept after me a little bit, and we took a little bit of a trial run, and I wasn't working, and I had a lot of time. So once we started doing it, we tried to make it a good book, and we worked hard. Dan especially worked really hard, and we just kind of started at 04, and ended, you know, after the 11th season, and we tried to make it the best book we could.
Let me ask you a little bit about your 9-year playing career. You were a journeyman, and I'm just wondering how you looked at the game as a journeyman player as compared to how you looked at the game as a manager.
Well, I think being a journeyman player, which is kind of a nice way of saying I'm not very good, really helped for this side of the game. And I think I played for 16 managers, and you know, you get to see a lot of different styles, a lot of different viewpoints, a lot of different ways things are handled, which I think is valuable for when you get into coaching, you know. And then ultimately, you have to kind of be true to yourself and handle things the way you want. But I certainly learned a lot along the way.
One of the things in managing in Philadelphia and managing in Boston, two very, you know, the fans really get involved, the media gets involved. When you took over the Philadelphia job, tell me a little bit about what you expected it to be and what it turned out to be.
Oh, my goodness. I think I was 36 or 37 years old, and I was learning on the run. You know, I mean, it was the reason they hired me is because they weren't expecting to be real good. And they wanted a young guy that would be patient and try to help these guys get better. And, you know, 4 years in Philadelphia losing, that'll wear on anybody. But it helped, and I think it really helped for when I got to Boston. Because I had the 4 years of experience under my belt, I do think it helped prepare me for Boston.
When you look at the criticism or the way you were covered in Philadelphia, the way the fans injected their feelings about it, did it make it a little bit easier in taking over the Boston job?
Well, nothing makes it easier taking over in Boston. I mean, you try to be prepared, but until you live through it, you just don't know. I mean, it's just there's so much passion, so much attention. People care so much about that team that, and it's good. Again, if you like baseball like I do, it's a great place to be associated with baseball.
One of the things that I know, having been a sportscaster on television in Boston, I remember I was always fearful that if I ever gave Carl Yastrzemski's batting average as 321 and it was 322, I was going to hear from every little old lady all the way up to the state of Maine, Terry. But there is something unique about that franchise, just the feel of it. Every franchise has a different feel, but can you help me as far as defining the Boston franchise?
You know what? It's you're right. And there's just so much enthusiasm, and it sometimes it borders on, you know, being a little bit crazy. But, you know, it's almost like a town. You know, people, they know when we call a kid up from AAA, everybody knows who it is. There's just so much interest in the Red Sox. And it's just sometimes as a manager, it makes you go home with a headache. But like I said, it's a great place to be a part of baseball.
One of the things that I did not understand, Terry, is that you had been there for a long time. You had proven yourself. You had won a couple of World Series. And why at the end did they give you more respect or more appreciation for what you had accomplished for that franchise?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, the way it ended certainly isn't the way I would have scripted it. We had a miserable September, and, you know, things were, I think, maybe kind of real. It was realistic that maybe my shelf life was kind of ending in Boston. What happened after I left, you know, really hurt me a lot. And I don't wake up every morning and think about it, but I also won't change my opinion on how it ended and how disappointed I was.
What was it that hurt you the most?
It was probably that article that was written, you know, where there were anonymous sources talking about things that, you know, were pretty personal and probably had no business being in the paper. That hurt me because somebody set out to hurt me, and they did a good job of it. And, you know, again, like I said, I certainly, you know, time, you know, as you get away, time helps. But I won't ever forget that that happened.
You know, there are a couple things in the book that a lot of people have gleamed onto. One of them is the tug of war with the Red Sox ownership group. One of the quotes is, they come in with all these ideas about baseball, but I don't think that they love baseball. Now, when I read that quote, my read on it, Terry, is that you're talking about businessmen that have a business in a baseball franchise, but they didn't grow up with baseball. They didn't play it. They weren't in the locker room day in and day out. Is that the right read on that quote?
Exactly. I've had people ask me, you know, like say, hey, you're really being critical of the owners. It wasn't meant to be critical. In fact, in the middle of that quote, I think I said they're really good owners. I think I was comparing it to myself, where this is all I've ever done, and this is all I ever want to do. And it is a little bit different. And I was just trying to make the point.
You know, a lot of people point to that last month that you were there when you guys had a 9-game lead over Tampa Bay in the wild card race. And I've tried to understand it as an outsider as to what happened. Give me some insight from the inside about what happened in that last month.
Oh, boy, it was difficult. I mean, we didn't pitch very well at all. I mean, that's probably the understatement of the year. We were wildly consistent offensively. You know, our numbers probably weren't bad when it was all said and done. But, one game we score 11, and then we go a couple games where we would score one or two. And we just but the basic, I think, thing is that we didn't handle frustration very well. And that's, in baseball, that's such a big thing. And that team just didn't ever get to that point, and it was really disappointing. And, again, that's not on me. And that's why I was so, when I came out and said that, I felt like I maybe lost my voice a little bit in the clubhouse, because I always prided myself on our teams, getting that personality and caring about each other, especially on the field. And that team never got to that point.
I know that there was a meeting that you had with the ownership group, and it was said that it was a meeting in which they said that you had lost control of the clubhouse. But in the book, you say you never said that. You said, I didn't lose control of the clubhouse. I said I hadn't been able to reach some of the guys. And I would assume after a long season, and as you said, the frustration that goes along with losing a large lead like that, that guys just kind of tune out not only their manager, but anybody that would be talking to them.
Yeah, I was disappointed. I think Tom Werner made that statement, and,
right.
And I would have never said that, because that's not how I felt. I was frustrated at my inability to maybe impact some of the players, but I never felt like I lost control of the clubhouse, nor would I say that, so I was disappointed about that.
The other thing that I found interesting, Theo Epstein traded Adrian Gonzalez. He signed Carl Crawford following the pressure from the Red Sox owners to build a sexy team. What did they mean by a sexy team?
Well, I think part of what that meant was some of the ratings were going down with Ness. And, when I got up here in 04, the winter of 03, everything that the Red Sox did was news. We tried to trade for Alex Rodriguez, and, the Patriots are on their way to the Super Bowl, and we're still on the back page of the sports. It was just, I don't think you can ever duplicate that. And, the ratings are going down, and I think, the owners are probably concerned, which I understand. But, when I was asked a question, I always wanted to make sure I answered it from a baseball viewpoint, because that's what my job was. And I felt like if we didn't handle winning baseball, all the other things were going to go away. And so that was my number one concern, was us winning games.
One of the things I've always been concerned about is kind of the tail wagging the dog. And what I mean by that, Terry, is the fact that television sometimes dictates. And in the book, you also talk about the fact that the ownership did not want and even refused to let the Red Sox play day games on the final days of homestands because of television. Explain to everyone why.
Well, what it was is, we used to have roundtable meetings, which I thought were really good, and players could voice their concerns and things like that. It was a good way to communicate with ownership. And one of the things the players always wanted was, on getaway days, was to play more day games, so we'd get into the next city at maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night instead of 3 or 4 in the morning. And what happens so often when you do that, teams will reciprocate. So actually, in essence, it's not just giving you one good getaway day, but you're getting another one on the flip side. And it really helps. And I think it helps keep teams healthy. I always thought when we went through those periods when we had road trips, when we were getting in 3 or 4 in the morning, that's when I noticed guys pulling muscles or getting sick. And I don't think it was a coincidence.
In the book you state that the marketing report said that women are definitely more drawn to soap opera and reality TV aspects of the game. They're interested in good-looking stars and sex symbols. That was a reference to All-Star second baseman Dustin Pedroia. I find it hard to believe that people would be so superficial. I understand the business aspect of it, Terry, but in the final analysis, that if you don't do the right thing for your players and your team, then it doesn't matter how good-looking the players are.
Yeah, and again, that was something. That was a survey that, you know, I had to give Dan Shaughnessy a lot of leeway because he covered the team for so long, and he came up with that survey. I never knew anything about that when I was here, and it was just a survey. I don't think that, you know, that meant we ran our team that way. I just think they were trying to figure out a way to get the Red Sox back on the map, you know, and get the ratings back up to where they were.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you about the year you stepped away. You went into the broadcasting area, and it's usually an opportunity for somebody to recharge the batteries, catch their breath, kind of survey the landscape, in this case, baseball. Tell me what you did that year after you'd stepped away from the Boston Red Sox as far as trying to renew your interest in baseball, at least maybe from a coaching, managing standpoint.
Well, it's a good point. You know, to tell yourself you need to step back isn't the easiest thing to do, but it was probably really healthy for me. I kind of got beat up a little bit at the end of Boston and probably lost my perspective a little bit. And to do this job and to do it correctly, I think you got to be all in. And so when you step back and I still got to watch the games with ESPN, but I didn't have the emotion of a win or a loss hanging over my head. And I think it was really good for me because now I know, you know, we're going to start spring training in a couple weeks, and I know how revved up I am about it, and I think that's the only way you can do this job correctly.
How hard is it to get a shell, Terry, when you have people second-guessing you, either in the clubhouse, ownership level, management, or even the media and the fans?
Oh, I don't mind the media and the fans second-guessing me ever. I think that's part of what's fun about baseball. And if somebody asks me a question about strategy and I don't have a good answer, shame on me. You know, when it's maybe ownership or something like that, that makes it a little bit harder. But again, it's part of the game. And what I found happening was some of that stuff was starting to bother me more than it used to. And that's on me. So again, there was a lot of things going on, and I was probably losing some of my patience too. That's why I kind of said, I think maybe my shelf life here, it was just maybe time to move on.
Let me ask you about the two World Series briefly here, 2004 and then again in 2007. When you think back on them, each one of them, what is it that you appreciate about those that maybe somebody who was not involved with them, who didn't help dictate the strategy of those World Series, would not see? What did Terry Francona appreciate?
Oh, I think for me it was the journey. I mean, I loved going through it with those guys. You know, I've told other people, about 10 minutes after all the champagne was cracked open and everybody's jumping on each other, I was like, okay, what's next? I mean, I loved it, but that was the fun part, you know, watching Dave Roberts still second and things like that. I got a kick out of that. I didn't need to wait for it to be over to say it was fun. So it's definitely the journey.
The one question I had was about Dave Roberts. Was that a steal sign, or did you just give him the right to go if he thought he could make it?
Yeah, we actually had talked about it in the tunnel before the inning, and we had set it up. We're like, you know, Milano's going to get on, and you're up, and you know you're going to pinch run, and you get a jump, you get the freedom to go. Because I know when he left the dugout, he kind of gave me that one last glance, and I winked at him like, "Go ahead, big boy, you can do it." And Billy Miller, we had given Billy Miller so many sets of instructions, like he's going to try to steal, but if he can't, you got to keep a heads up for a bunt sign. So I remember Billy was like, hey, slow down, man. You're giving me a lot of things here. But Dave Roberts did such a terrific job. And Rivera threw over, I think, three or four times. And it kind of seemed like a relaxed Davey. And he got that little extra step. And it's a good thing because that's probably the best throw Posada's ever made.
And it was a big play. We got about 30 seconds left. What do you want people to take away from this book, Francona, The Red Sox Years, Terry?
You know, I hope maybe just that although we take what we're doing really serious, I hope we don't take ourselves too seriously. It's supposed to be a lot of really fun stories, things in the clubhouse that maybe people don't hear, but they're, you know, where we poke fun at ourselves. And like I said, we take what we're doing serious, but we try not to take ourselves too serious.
Are you happy with the way the book came out?
Yeah, you know what? We worked really hard, and I was really proud of Dan. It's not a coupling that I would have envisioned a couple years ago, but we really worked hard together and we had a good time and I am proud of it. And you know, the goal wasn't to upset anybody. The goal was to write a good book. And, you know, again, I probably read it seven times before we put it out just because I wanted it to be good.
Terry, thank you very much. Come back here anytime on Sports Byline.
Thanks for having me, Ron. Take care, man.
Terry Francona with us, the manager now of the Cleveland Indians. We continue on Sports Byline.